Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm excited. In fact, I'm about to come out of my chair, I have to confess. Mary Beth Franklin's on the line with me, and she is a giant in the investment and financial world. If you don't know Mary Beth, well, you're in for a treat. She's a public speaker. She's a contributing editor to Investment News. She has written the book, Maximizing Your Social Security Retirement Benefits. She's out there on the edge. She's a giant in our industry, and I'm really humbled and happy to have her on the program. She has received her Bachelor of Arts in Communication from American University. She's completed this Certified Financial Planner Certificate Program at the University of Virginia, and has passed the CFP certification exam last year. She's currently serving as a professional mentor to graduate students at American University in their journalism program, and serves on the Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards Advisory Panel for It's a Women's Initiative. And she has been with Investment News, a contributing editor, since 2012. Mary Beth Franklin, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. I love talking to you and your audience.
Well, you are most welcome, and you are welcome most of the time. I'd love to have you on anytime you want to come on, because I love your articles. We keep track, and my listeners know that we follow Investment News closely as a trusted resource, and you're one of those resources in Investment News, and I couldn't help but become a little preoccupied with your Social Security cost of living adjustments projected to increase slightly in 2015, your article you wrote back in the beginning of October, and I just love your analysis. And let's just to get everybody up to speed on what we're talking about. The COLA has been announced for 2015?
Yes, it has, and it's a whopping 1.7%.
Woohoo!
Slightly more than the 1.5% for 2014.
Well, we don't integrate sound effects on our program here, but I'll give some off-the-cuff ones. Woohoo, that's not very good. Now, here's the problem, as I know you're very well aware, Mary Beth. That doesn't feed the bulldog. That doesn't go very far, because a lot of people drawing Social Security are experiencing, even though we have been told that inflation is in check, they are still experiencing increased cost of living nonetheless.
And, you know, the real challenge is senior citizens tend to have a different inflation rate than the rest of Americans, because they tend to spend a lot more of their money on healthcare.
Yes.
And healthcare inflation tends to rise at a much higher rate than the basic energy, food, and shelter that the rest of us focus on.
Amen. And there is, you know, that we always hear about these statistics and how inflation is low and the Federal Reserve is so concerned about deflation and it, you know, the monetary policy, and we're trying to reach their target 2% inflation rate, and people are going, well, what are you talking about? I'm experiencing real rates of inflation, and it's because we all have our own experience with, really, each of us has a unique inflation rate experience depending on our lifestyle and what we spend our money on.
Right. The good news is health care inflation has abated a bit. There was quite a while where it was going up double digits every year.
Yes.
It's now down probably in the 7% range.
Oh, wow.
But that's still about five times higher than the cost of living adjustment that Social Security beneficiaries will get for next year.
So the 1.7 versus maybe the blended rate between health care and all the other factors affecting Social Security recipients, let's just call it for ease of comparison, maybe it's somewhere north of 5%.
Correct.
This 1.7, it goes one-third of the way there.
Well, let me also interrupt you for a second and
sure.
Say, when I wrote that first story, which was based on a totally accurate estimate by a seniors advocate group here in Washington, 1.7%, they made this prediction about 3 or 4 weeks before the official announcement came out. I have never gotten such a big response to anything I've written for Investment News. And the irony is, so many of these comments were, you know, these darn politicians, they're not giving seniors enough. This is, you know, a crying shame. And I had to say, well, guys, thanks for your input. But you know what? This is a mathematical formula that was set in law in 1972. It has nothing to do with what politicians are or are not doing. It's simple mathematics. The problem that's such a challenge is, first of all, they use Bureau of Labor Statistics measurements of average wage increases for urban workers. Now, we all already discussed that senior citizens really are not looking at wage inflation. They're looking at healthcare inflation.
Right.
The other thing that they do that's strange in calculating this cost of living adjustment is they take the CPI for wage earners in the third quarter of 1 year and compare it to the third quarter of the previous year. And if there's an increase, that's what the cost of living adjustment will be. Well, let's go back a couple years to 2009. When this happened, there was a fluke spike in gas prices that summer. And as a result, for 2009, Social Security beneficiaries got an unheard of 5.8% cost of living adjustment. Mm. But that bar was so high that for the next 2 years, they couldn't get above it. So there was no cost of living adjustment for 2010 and 2011. And it's just in the last few years we're starting to get these minor increases again. But compared to the previous decade where it was an average of 3%, these are pretty skimpy cost of living adjustments for seniors.
Well, and Mary Beth, you're right on target and you're right on point, of course, with the math and how this was set back in law in the early 70s. I think the frustration... And naturally, what, you know, we sent you guys up to Congress to fix Social Security, and people want, naturally, as I'm sure you would understand, that they want them to, okay, fine, the law is what it is, but fix it, make it better for me. I mean, you know, I voted for you. Where's my dividend?
And now, here's the other irony. We talk about eventual Social Security reform. It has to happen at some point. Right now, we expect the Social Security Retirement Trust Fund to run dry around 2033. Now, that doesn't mean Social Security will be bankrupt. There would be enough tax revenues coming in every year from current workers to pay about 75% of promised benefits. But frankly, no one's going to be happy with 75%. So I firmly believe we will see changes sometime between now and then to put it on firm financial footing. But one of those proposed changes is to change the way the cost of living adjustment is calculated so that it would grow even more slowly than it does now.
And I just can't
imagine how unpopular that proposal
might be. Yeah, and I can't imagine that happening. I mean, I can't imagine that they think it's going to be 75% of what they're getting, let alone not something more than even an even minor increase. They want it to be 105% what it is, let alone a reduction.
Right. So these are the tough decisions that American lawmakers and the American public in general will face. But the one thing I will say, having covered the Social Security reform in 1983 as a very young reporter for United Press International.
That was the middle school or elementary school program,
yes,
right?
Yes, I was doing it for my grade school paper.
Okay.
But what they did back then was brilliant as far as making reforms that would put Social Security on solid footing, because the changes were so gradual, things that included gradually raising the full retirement age from what it was, 65, it's currently 66, and those changes approved an increase to 67 for people born in 1960 or later. That means those changes won't take effect till 2027. So laws that were passed more than 30 years ago have not yet been fully implemented. So Congress tends to give people a very long time to get used to any potential changes.
Well put. Mary Beth Franklin, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest today, and you can see why I was excited to have her on the program, public speaker and contributing editor to Investment News. The book, Maximizing Your Social Security Retirement Benefits, and we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with Mary Beth. Stay right there.
When it comes to finding an advisor you can trust, are you unsure of the questions to ask? David Holland has written a book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy today. Or if you'd like to meet one-on-one with David to discuss your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book when you meet. There's no cost or obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We have Mary Beth Franklin on the line with me. And We've been talking about her recent article on investment news. Social Security cost of living adjustment projected to increase slightly in 2015. The official number out is 1.7%. Woohoo! Those are the special sound effects on this program. And so, Mary Beth, you know, coming back to this, this is something that, of course, they are continuing to tinker with, and we'll see what comes down the line with Social Security rehabilitation and securing the promise of Social Security for all Americans and all of the political implications that may bring. And there are some rather provocative and even in some cases extreme solutions that have been bannered about how to shore up Social Security, and the reduced inflation or cost of living adjustment is just one of them. Some of them are even more severe of how they might try to fix it. I often tell, and I actually sometimes have to have a, you know, kind of an extended conversation about this, Mary Beth, with some of the clients and prospective clients I work with, that I personally, and this is just my own personal opinion, you know, I don't think Social Security is going anywhere. I think it's such an integral part of retirement for many Americans that they're going to have to find a way to, you know, to make sure it sticks around.
I firmly believe it is the most popular and the most successful government program in history. And more importantly, members of Congress realize that senior citizens vote in higher percentages than the rest of the population. So I have no concerns that it would ever go away. I think we will see changes going forward. I don't have a crystal ball, but I would suspect that perhaps higher income retirees who currently pay taxes on some of their Social Security benefits may pay taxes on even more of their Social Security benefits. But I also don't believe Social Security will ever become means tested in the sense that, gee, if you make too much money in retirement, you won't get a Social Security benefit. That would destroy the essence of the program created by Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1935 that said, this is not an entitlement, this is an earned benefit. Mm. You pay taxes all of your career, and you are guaranteed to get a benefit as a result of those taxes. This should not be confused with something that comes out of general tax revenues. The FICA taxes, those payroll taxes you pay in each of your paychecks, are earmarked to pay Social Security benefits.
Amen. Well, I do have a crystal ball in my office, Mary Beth.
But well,
we have four of them, one in each conference room, and there's a little sign that hangs underneath it. It says, "Crystal ball broken, financial planning required."
I like it.
And so
everybody could use a little financial planning.
Yes, they sure could. And I agree with you. I don't think they're going to make it means tested to where you lose the benefit, but I do think they will definitely. We already have it. It's at 50 or 85% of Social Security being taxed, brought into income. Now, I'm not talking about losing it for taking it while you're working it and having earned income, but I'm talking about, for our listeners' benefit, that 50 to 85%, depending on your other income, of Social Security is taxed. That could easily go to 100%. And maybe even they do flirt with a little bit of taking it back by maybe making it more than 100% of it being taxed, you know, and doing some sort of formula. But you'll still get it, and it'll have to pass through the gauntlet of the tax return to see what the net effect is.
Speaking of the value of Social Security benefits, you know, the crucial thought I'd like to get across
sure.
to your audience is that, yes, you can collect benefits as early as age 62. Which the majority of people still do. But the difference between collecting a reduced benefit at 62, worth 75% of your full retirement age benefit, and delaying up until age 70, the increase between 62 and 70 is 76% increase in your benefit. And for so many people, it will be the only form of guaranteed cost of living adjusted retirement income that you can't outlive. For so many Americans, it's the only pension they'll ever see. So I'm not saying everyone should delay. It depends on your financial circumstances, your health, your marital status. There's many things to take into account. But certainly, you should give it enough thought as you would to any decision in your investment portfolio. Because for most Americans, the lifetime value of Social Security is worth more than the equity in their home, more than the balance in their 401k, more than their other sources of income. So you should at least take the time to weigh your options and make the right decision for you.
Amen. I'm in church. I'm in the church of Mary Beth Franklin's Social Security. I agree 100%. In fact, I'll raise you one up on that one, Mary Beth. I think if somebody has questions about it, there are online solutions here that people can go online and look at things, or they can sit down with a financial planner who's had Social Security training and actually go through and do some different modeling and calculations. If somebody asks me about that, I can tell them exactly when to take Social Security, at what age, and what type of filing, because as you know very well, Mary Beth, there's lots of different ways to slice and dice your Social Security benefits. If you draw it at full retirement age, you have some options. And that is another reason to do it past 62, which is where, again, the bulk of Americans are drawing it. If you wait a little longer, you've got some options you wouldn't otherwise have. And then if you do have the ability to wait till 70, the numbers just get so much bigger. And what is the saying, shop till you drop? Well, maybe work until you drop or hit 70, whichever comes first. Hopefully it's 70. Push it off. And what do they say, 70 is a new 40?
Or at least the new 65.
There you go. That's excellent. It has evolved and it has changed. And look, if somebody's got a job, a career, what they do to make a living, and they are enjoying it, they're able to morph it into something that works for them, and they're healthy, or they're able to maintain it, I can save the calculations, which I'm happy to provide. But I can tell, as you can, Mary Beth, that it makes such a big, I mean, we're talking about big dollars here in terms of the total benefit you receive over your lifetime.
Right, particularly for a married couple, knowing how and when to claim Social Security in the sense of at what age and what type of claim you're going to make could mean the difference of $100,000 or more over their joint lifetime. So that's a real chunk of money. The other thing I'd like consumers to become more aware of, particularly as so many people are working beyond age 65, which is the age where you become eligible for Medicare, is there's some very important decisions about Medicare as well. And it will make a difference whether you're still working or not, and perhaps being able to get access to health insurance through your current employer. And the other thing people may not realize is Medicare is means-tested. In other words, the amount of your income in retirement will determine how much you pay for Medicare for the exact same services. And I'm hoping that financial advisors come to realize that maybe the traditional way of thinking about retirement income, which was dash as much money as you could in your 401k, your IRA, because you get a tax deduction up front and worry about paying those taxes later, may not be the smartest move anymore. Because what people need going forward is lots of different types of retirement income. Some that might be tax-free, like in a Roth. Some that might be tax-deferred, like a traditional 401k. And some that might be investment account that's taxed at capital gains rate. Having those different pots of money to draw from can make a big difference, not only in the amount of income tax you pay in retirement, but how much you pay for Medicare premiums.
Amen, 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 amen. Can I get an amen in the house? And I've got one for Mary Beth Franklin. What you're talking about?
I'd like a gospel choir in the background myself.
I think we'll have to add that in. We'll find a way to get that in. But what Mary Beth is talking about is tax diversification. You can diversify your investments across different asset classes, or foreign versus domestic, large cap, small cap, mid cap, all those things. When it comes to your investment, it's also smart to do the same thing from a tax standpoint, so that when you do draw these money out in retirement, that you can do some management of your tax obligations and help to mitigate, or at least reduce how much of your income is going to tax, because that'll affect your Social Security. It'll affect how much of it's taxable. It'll also affect how much you pay for your Medicare Part B premium. Excellent stuff, Mary Beth. We're going to grab another quick break. We'll be right back with Mary Beth Franklin. Stay right there.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialist, and certified annuity specialist. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and accurate service to our 300-plus clients. If you're looking for financial advice you can count on today and for many years to come, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back. Mary Beth Franklin online with me, and she has written the book, Maximizing Your Social Security Retirement Benefits. And you can see why, because she is very current on all of these issues that we're talking about with Social Security. And we were talking before the break, Mary Beth, about the tax diversification. And, you know, one of the concepts sometimes that is a little bit of a challenge for people to get their mind around is they are so used to, as they are working and even after working, they're so used to trying to stay, to push off, to push back, to avoid, minimize taxes at all costs almost sometimes, even to the point where they make sometimes bad investment decisions, which is the subject of another show. But they get so wound up on that that they don't realize, and again, this is part of my work as a planner, that sometimes paying taxes sooner is going to give you a lower tax bill or lower out-of-pocket costs when you factor in Medicare Part B or you factor in paying taxes on your Social Security down the road. Sometimes you need to go ahead and pay taxes on some of your income and not defer it.
And I think that's a very hard concept for people to grasp, because all their lives they've been talking about the value of deferring taxes until later. And even if you can logically make the argument, gee, it really makes sense to convert that traditional IRA to a Roth IRA and pay taxes now because you'll be so much better off later, it's hard for a lot of people to pull that trigger.
Yeah, and because it's painful.
It's very painful, but I think we are now seeing more and more reasons to show clients why it may make sense to pay some taxes now to mitigate the higher tax bill later. And it's a really change in the mindset of retirement income planning in general. And for so many years, I think people thought, well, it's pretty simple. You save for retirement now, you put the money in, and then you just pull it out because we won't be working anymore and we'll be in a lower tax bracket. Well, we found out that's not necessarily true.
Right.
And for you to have as much spendable income in retirement,
very good.
It makes sense to take steps now that's going to reduce the tax bite later.
Yeah, that's really the bottom line, Mary Beth, because you know how you get there, there's a lot of different ways to do it, but after-tax cash flow or net cash flow or what can you spend, what is going to come in, how reliable is it, and how do you make the most of your assets and the order in which you take the money, where you draw from, what you tap into, even doing something with the equity in your home might be
another. You know, that's a great point, David. For so long we grew up on the concept of a three-legged stool of retirement, which was traditionally pension, personal savings, and Social Security. Well, pensions are history for most people. Personal savings may be inadequate. Social Security is really that final leg of the stool, a little wobbly, you might call it a pogo stick. We need to create this new analogy for retirement income, and I think a pyramid works much better, using Social Security as the base for most Americans, and layering on top of that retirement savings in the form of 401ks or IRAs, and on top of that, for many people, it's going to be home equity, and that might come in the form of a reverse mortgage. It might be paying off your traditional mortgage and just staying in your house mortgage-free, or downsizing to something smaller and banking the difference. And then on top of that home equity, for a lot of people, it's going to be continued employment, whether it's full-time, part-time, seasonal, consulting basis, and then at the top of the pyramid, other investable assets. And you can see where, for each individual, the answer about which assets tap and when is going to be unique. You know, it will depend on are they married? Are they single? Are they healthy? Are they taking care of an elderly parent? Do they have a boomerang kid in the basement? And that's where financial planners are really going to earn their stripes, I think, going forward, helping people create these very individual retirement income plans.
I tell you what, Mary Beth, you're on it. You're dialed right in on this industry and the challenges that not only investors face, but why financial planners can be of service to them. And as you were describing that layering effect, I had in my mind a slide, a PowerPoint. I use PowerPoint to present my financial plans to my clients on a 32-inch flat screen TV in the conference room, and we walk through it. And it really is just as you described, Mary Beth. It's a layering of these different sources of income, when to take what. And you start out with a Social Security, and as you people think about that and look at their personal situations, we may have a period of income that's coming from work. Then we're making the transition to maybe drawing on other assets to allow them to put off that Social Security, as we talked about earlier, to make the most of it and get a lot more income later. And then also layering in and pulling in from other sources, be it equity in the home through the reverse mortgage or being drawing on an annuity or drawing from IRAs. And again, exposing some of it to tax on purpose. And then also the Roth money. So all of that, that's what I signed up for. That's why I love my job, to confess, Mary Beth, is I get to do that every day. And it's like a puzzle, and how to figure that out and show people how to put that all together. It's really interesting work.
Well, I'm glad you do it. And people are going to need this help more and more, I think.
Well, because the game has changed. As you said earlier, it used to be you accumulate and you have a chunk and then you draw down. And with longevities now, I mean, you know, good grief. Somebody, the statistics, you know, we're getting into the 90s now. And I like to show a plan to age 100. And sometimes people will laugh. Sometimes people will say, that's David, what are you thinking? I'll say, okay, well, you tell me how long you're going to live. If you want me to use age 90, I will. But let's talk about your family history, and let's look at how long these assets need to accumulate, and let's think about your inflation, and we can't assume these low rates. We got to be a little more realistic. That's where people can be engaged in the process and understand that this is something that you have to work on, and it takes a little time, but boy, is it worth it.
Exactly.
So, well, I tell you what, Mary Beth, this is great stuff. And I'm glad we can tap you as a resource to help us understand. Any final thoughts about Social Security that we have for our listeners today?
Just to get good advice. Don't assume that what your neighbor did or what your brother-in-law did is the right thing for you. It's part of the overall retirement income picture. And married couples should look at their Social Security claiming decision as a household decision.
Yes, very good.
Not two separate decisions. It can make a big difference.
Outstanding. I couldn't say it better. Maximizing Your Social Security Retirement Benefits. That's the book. The author, public speaker, contributing editor to Investment News is Mary Beth Franklin. Mary Beth, always a pleasure to have you on. We will welcome you back any day, any time, and come back and we'll talk about another subject.
Thank you. And people can get a copy of that book at www.investmentnews.com/MBF ebook. Those are my initials. MBF ebook.
Excellent. Excellent. Good stuff. Well, we will make sure we direct them there. And thank you again, Mary Beth.
Thank you, David.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.